Hi, everyone. My name is Dr. Rita Roy, CEO of the Spine Health Foundation, and I'm your host for the Get Back to It podcast, where we tell real stories of healing and recovery. What does it mean to get back to it? It means overcoming a spine problem through treatments that work in order to return to the people and activities you love, whatever that looks like for you. It means getting back to your life. We're here to share the success stories of those who did just that. And some of these stories, you're not going to believe. At the Get Back to It podcast, our goal is to tell stories of spinal champions who've been able to achieve a better quality of life through spinal health care. Today's guest is Daniel Ramey from Lewis, Delaware, who began his spine journey in 2019 after being diagnosed with multi-level degenerative disc disease. He suffered years of chronic pain. With years of suffering, his relentless pursuit of solutions led him back to gardening and never giving up hope. Let's get back to it and hear his remarkable story. In 2019, Daniel's life changed with a diagnosis that would mark the beginning of a years-long battle with spinal issues.
Yes, Rita. That year, I was diagnosed with multi-level degenerative disc disease. This condition can cause multiple spinal discs to deteriorate, causing bone to rub against bone. On top of that, I had moderate to severe spinal canal stenosis and neuroforaminal narrowing throughout my lumbar spine, which put pressure on my spinal cord and the nerves. The symptoms were relentless, constant low back pain and frequent debilitating muscle spasms. These muscle spasms weren't just uncomfortable, they were consuming, and I ended up in the emergency room on multiple occasions. They made simple movements difficult and took a serious toll on my quality of life. The pain levels were becoming chronic, causing me to give up my favorite hobbies of boating, gardening, woodworking, and spending time with friends. That year, I also decided to retire from a 34-year career in higher education, and I struggled with maintaining a positive outlook on life.
In August of 2019, Daniel underwent his first spine surgery, a laminectomy and spinal fusion from L2 to L5.
The goal of that surgery was relief of that I was looking for, relief from the pain, the spasms, the limitations. Unfortunately, in the years that followed, instead of my condition improving, my spasms got worse. The pain became more unpredictable and harder to manage. The muscle spasms continued to increase in frequency and severity. Driving over a simple speed bump could cause me to go into full spasms with the most excruciating pain. I sold my boats, started to give up other hobbies like gardening and simple home repairs. I saw my original surgeon several times after the surgery, and he didn't provide any answers as to what was going on and why I was continuing with worsening muscle spasms. I was struggling to keep a positive outlook on life, not to mention the number of daily chores my spouse had to take over. You can imagine the stress my condition placed on my life and my spouse's life.
Over the next 5 years, Daniel's pain persisted and even intensified. The pain was not just impeding on his life, it was leading to disability and taking him to a dark place.
Yes, I found myself in the emergency room multiple times because of how severe the spasms were. And even the simplest of tasks would set them off. I was working with a pain management specialist, relying on prescription narcotics and committed to an intensive physical therapy and dry needling regime that lasted over 2 years. From 2021 to 2024, just before the surgery, I went to physical therapy for dry needling twice a week, every week. It was my physical therapist who diagnosed that the situation was completely related to nerve compression. I went from being a very active person with multiple hobbies to just existing, living in constant fear and uncertainty. It got to the point where I was afraid to travel and some days afraid to leave the house. With chronic pain, you learn how to manage it as best you can at home. But the idea of leaving the house even to go to the grocery store was frightening. Social events were no longer fun and just filled with fear.
In early 2023, Daniel returned to his original surgeon in search of answers. But instead of a quick fix, he looked in a new direction, seeking additional opinions.
My original surgeon recommended getting other perspectives. That was the moment I realized I needed to be more assertive and take full ownership of my care. I received epidural steroid injections at L5, S1, and T11 to T12. And while they helped for a bit, the relief didn't last for more than a week. What it did signal was where the main nerve problems were. The spasms and pain kept coming back. My original surgeon told me what his next steps would be surgically and stressed I should get at least one or two more opinions. I researched the top spine specialists at the two teaching medical systems in my area. That led me to an appointment with an orthopedic specialist at Johns Hopkins University and at the University of Maryland Medical System. After the initial appointment with the surgeon from University of Maryland, my spouse and I knew this was the right surgeon. He specialized in revision spinal surgeries, and he was the first to tell me the original fusion of L2 to L5 was done flat instead of having the appropriate lumbar curvature. This was the first time since 2019 I felt like there might be some hope.
Daniel's turning point came in January 2024 when he underwent a comprehensive spinal reconstruction procedure with the new surgeon. It was a major decision and a major surgery, but Daniel had found hope.
I think what gave me the most confidence was when my new orthopedic surgeon explained that he would have a vascular and plastic surgeon assisting him on different components of the surgery. The surgery was extensive and lasted over 8 hours. It started with an anterior lumbar interbody fusion at L5 S1, also known as an ALIF, where they placed a cage and used allograft bone. On the posterior side, the team had to remove the original hardware from my L2 to L5 fusion and then extended the fusion from T9 all the way to S1, placing the natural curve in my spine and correcting some minor scoliosis. Scar tissue was removed, a dorsal sac defect was repaired, and a fat graft was placed over scarring at L3 to L4. The biggest thing I had to mentally prepare myself for was the fact the first surgery resulted in a dorsal sac tear, and I had to stay flat on my back for 9 days. I knew the probability of another dorsal sac tear was highly likely. Lying flat on my back for any number of days was going to be my biggest mental challenge.
After such a complicated surgery, the recovery journey was far from simple.
Yes, Rita, there were many PTSD moments. I was just waiting for a muscle spasm to happen. All of the old triggers were still on my mind. I needed to learn how to walk with a normal gait based on all the level of fusion. Quickly, I learned that tying my shoes or getting down on the ground and back up were my biggest challenges. Now, more than a year and a half since the surgery, I can say with confidence that I'm free from the spasms and pain that defined my life for 5 years. I'm back to biking, gardening, and doing most of the things I had to give up. It feels like I've gotten my life back.
Wow, wow, wow. What an unbelievable story and what an incredible journey you've been through, Daniel. I am just overwhelmed with a sense of gratitude for you being here with me today and sharing your story. You know, it's really remarkable what people go through in their lives. And, you know, I think what pops out to me in talking with you and learning about your journey is the fact that you didn't give up on yourself. And I think sometimes it's easy to do that. That persistence and that perseverance to find answers. You know, sometimes we just, things happen and we think, well, I guess this is just how the cards worked out for me. But I think, you know, in spine care, it's complicated. It's a journey and you got to search for those answers. What kept you going? What do you think it was that got you to a place where you just said, there's got to be an answer here?
That's a great question. I would say that there was a period of time where I had given up. I had truly given up. It just seemed like there was no hope. The dry needling was a Band-Aid, you know, which I was grateful for. It would give me periods of relief, but it was just a temporary Band-Aid. And I even had the pain management specialist say to me that this was probably going to be the rest of my life.
Wow.
And I think that's when I decided this would not be the rest of my life. And I started to do more research. And that's when I made the appointment with my original surgeon to really try to nail down what exactly was going on and could we take care of this?
Yeah, it's remarkable. As I'm looking at you on the screen here, I'm seeing a handsome, vibrant, you know, just happy, young man. I don't know what your age is, but you know, you look great. You said that you retired, but I am seeing a picture of a healthy, happy, vibrant gentleman. And there's just no way that I can even imagine what you looked like a year and a half ago. And as I think about you describing just sort of this pain journey of just kind of giving up, it's, you know, again, it's amazing to not give up and to not give up hope. And, you know, that's what we're here to talk about today on the podcast is just there is hope out there. There are solutions out there, but you've got to take control of that yourself. No one's going to do that for you. And I think that moment where you said, wait a second, this is not going to be my story in life. How do we help people get to that moment to say, don't give up on yourself, but you got to do this for you. And that's what we want to do here at the foundation is to support people and to say, you know, here are some tools. Here are some places to look. Here are some places to go. Here are these stories from other people. And don't give up because there is hope out there. And I loved, you know, when you said that, you know, your original surgeon encouraged you to get multiple opinions. We talk a lot here in the foundation about encouraging people to get second and third opinions. What did that feel like for you when your original surgeon encouraged you to talk to, you know, another surgeon and get another opinion?
You know, it made me realize that he was not comfortable with doing the revision surgery that was necessary, first and foremost.
Yeah.
But it also made me realize that I had to do my due diligence in a way.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the biggest things I think that most of us don't fully understand is we have to be proactive with our healthcare.
Yeah.
Yeah, you can find some great people out there, but you have got to be the one that's proactive. And I think that's the biggest thing that had gotten me from a point where I thought, you know, my life was pretty much done. And then, you know, after I pushed the issue and he came up with an option and recommended seeing other surgeons, it just gave me the spark again to fight.
Yeah.
And that's what I think is so important about organizations like your foundation is to help people hear from other people that have been through this, because it's a dark, lonely world when you've been through this. And, you know, people try to understand, but nobody can understand what chronic back pain, you know, and chronic muscle spasms can do to you.
Gosh, Dana, you just have articulated that so beautifully. That is what we are here to do. And, you know, I was chatting with you before we started recording that this is what we are here for and that you found us. And share with our audience how you found the Spine Health Foundation and what your feeling was when you found us.
So the way I found you all was after my surgery was successful, and I gave it, you know, like 6 months just to, because you, as I said earlier, still going through the PTSD moment.
Yeah.
You know, you're just waiting for something like a speed bump or anything, you know, to send you back into a muscle spasm.
Yeah.
And it didn't happen. And that's when I really felt a calling or a passion to see how I could reach out and help other people. And so that's what led me on the research. That's when I found your foundation, listened to the podcast that you have up on, you know, your main page. And it was just so encouraging to hear other people's stories. And I thought that's one of the first ways I can help to give back.
That's amazing. Thank you. Thank you so much. That's what we are. That's what we live for. And thank you for making our mission so meaningful in this way. You know, a little bit of an infomercial, I guess, here for the foundation, but truly that's what we're here to do. And knowing that that mission is reaching people gives us all gratitude and satisfaction. I get to work with a team of professional people here who are very dedicated and passionate about our mission and helping people understand that spine is complicated, right? It's a complicated part of your body. There are bones, there are discs, there are nerves, there are muscles, tendons, and ligaments, and it's literally the backbone of your life. So if you lose your spine health, you lose your life. I mean, it really feels like you've lost your life, and you sort of describe that to us. You just like, I'm done. You know, and to know that though it's complicated, there are answers out here. And, you know, we also try really hard not to sugarcoat the stories. And your story is difficult and painful. And it's hard to imagine that you went through that one big surgery and it didn't work.
Right.
You know, it didn't work. And it took 5 years to say, no, I don't want to. I can't live like this, and it's got to be a different way. And so that piece of the self-advocacy of saying, I have got to do something different for myself and for my family. Because when a person is disabled or living in an unhappy way, it affects everybody else around them. And that's hard.
It is hard. And, you know, the other thing for me was I found myself, you know, like I went to motor vehicles and got a handicap tag and things that I never, ever would have thought would have been part of my life.
Yeah.
You know? And so you sort of have to let go of some preconceived, you know, notions about who you are.
Right. Say. Right.
And you've got to figure out how you're going to manage where you are at the time, but also, you know, try to look forward to see what else, what are my options? Because as you said, there are always options. And I am the type of person that as soon as somebody said to me, this is what the rest of your life was going to be, that caused me to say, no, it's not. Absolutely not.
Yeah. That is amazing. That was the spark that just, you know, the realization. The problem is when you're living with the chronic pain, you're like, you're not sleeping well. You know, you're distracted by the pain during the day. So you're not necessarily thinking as clearly as you can. And so you sort of, you know, you need that wake up call to say, nope, this is not going to be my story. I'm going to find a better way. So that is amazing. And I'm so happy that you had that moment and that you had a great physical therapist that said, this is not typical and you should look into this, right? And you know, for those of us who've experienced nerve pain, it is indescribable. It is indescribable, and you just can't describe it unless you've had it. You know, it's one thing when you break a bone or you tear a muscle, and you know that we call axial pain. Like, okay, that's pain. You can take a Tylenol or a Motrin or, you know, some kind of pain medicine. You can dull the pain, and then it gets better. Nerve pain, nothing touches that nerve pain, and it just doesn't go away.
Right,
and it just takes over your life. I want to fast forward now to your encounter with your second surgeon. So you've now made this decision to find more answers. And you go to a second opinion with the doctor at Maryland. Tell me what that was like. How did you know that was your doctor?
You know, that was one of the easiest decisions I ever made in my life.
Wow.
My spouse and I had the appointment. It took several months to get one, as you can imagine. Mm-hmm. And this surgeon came in the room. He had looked at the MRIs, all the medical notes. He had looked at everything from my original surgery. He didn't walk in the room and then pull it up on the computer. He had already looked at it before he came in the room to talk to us. And immediately his first thing was, did you realize your original fusion was done flat? And I was
like, what's that?
Yeah. Like, no, why? There's got to be a curve there because it's my lumbar spine, right?
Yeah.
And then he went over a few other things that he noticed immediately from the MRI. The current MRI. And I think he also tried not to say anything derogatory about his colleague who was, you know, was my first original surgeon. And, you know, so that meant a lot to me, right? Because mm-hmm. I could tell he was struggling not to say anything negative.
Yeah.
You know, but he was also not sugarcoating how things looked.
Right.
And then when he outlined the surgery that, you know, I had done, the way he outlined it to me, it made perfect sense. And it's why he wanted to fuse higher than what anybody else recommended, because he felt that, you know, if he was going to have the positive outcome that he wanted for me, that's what it was going to take. And he was the first medical doctor to confirm, you know, besides my physical therapist telling me this, he was the first medical doctor to confirm that the muscle spasms were coming from nerve compression.
Wow.
And that was just a game changer, you know, for me, because I think for most people, if we can understand what the underlying cause is, it makes it easier, right?
Right. Well, and that's, again, it's one of those things that we talk about is getting the right diagnosis and matching that to the right procedure.
Right.
Because there are some things that surgery doesn't fix, right? But there are other things that surgery is a definitive treatment. Get it done and get on with your life. So, but, again, spine is complicated, and there are lots of, you know, things that can go awry. So figuring out the right diagnosis and the right treatment path to fix that, you know, equals success. So yeah. it's you know, that's part of the mystery there and part of the journey.
And I would like to add, if I could, Rita, one of the big things too was he said right from the very beginning that he would have a vascular surgeon to handle, you know, doing the ALIF, because that's a complicated procedure, because so many things have to be moved out of the way when they go in from the front to
right.
try to get to your spine.
Yep.
And then he knew because of the first surgery, there was going to be a lot of scar tissue. The muscles were damaged in my back. And so that's why, you know, and to close up and do a good closure, he wanted a plastic surgeon that he, you know, worked with. Yes.
Yeah. So you just felt like you had the team in place, right?
That's exactly what I felt like. For the first time, I had a team. Yes. Yeah.
And that feeling is such an incredible feeling, having been a patient myself, when you're in the presence of a provider, a surgeon, who you just have a level of confidence with that, yeah, I'm in the right place for me and I'm going to get better. And you just have, there's a rapport that gets established with that doctor and you feel it. And that confidence just is part of the hope, right? Like, I'm in the right place. This man he did his homework. He's got a plan. He's setting expectations with me, showing me the team. And now I'm confident in that decision. And I think it's so important that people feel confident with their team preoperatively. So you've got to feel like you're in good hands.
Absolutely. And that was, you know, because I had to meet with both the vascular surgeon prior to and the plastic surgeon prior to. So yeah, that I knew the entire team. I had met our team, and that all of that was so reassuring.
Yeah.
And just the fact that he was so confident, you know, in what he thought he could accomplish.
Yeah. That's awesome. Yeah.
And it wasn't arrogance, you know, that's the other piece.
Yeah.
You know, sometimes in the medical world, you can come across somebody that could be a little arrogant and a little off-putting.
That's right.
If this was just pure confidence in, you know, what he does.
Yeah. And I like how you said that the fact that he didn't want to say anything negative about your previous surgeon, that, you know, that you respected that, you know, that's not what we're here to talk about today. Some things happen. They need to be fixed. Here's the solution. And we're looking forward. That, I think, was a very important piece for you from what you said and feeling like you'd arrived at, you know, someone who's a class act as a professional as well and in all dimensions.
Yes.
Of that.
I agree. Yeah. Even after my first follow-up after, you know, out of the hospital, you know, I looked at him and I said, can I give you a hug? Because you kind of gave me my life back.
Wow.
And, you know, that was kind of a moment where the two of us just, you know, really, I think, bonded even more than we had.
That's awesome.
Yeah.
That probably, for your surgeon, is what he lives for, those moments, right? And say that again, Daniel, that you got your life back.
I did get my life back. I am pain-free. Yeah, you know, I've had to learn how to regulate certain things, of course, but to not have a single muscle spasm since January of 2024, it was just a huge gift. And not worrying whether I'm going to, you know, have to go to the emergency room. It gave me my life back. It gave me gratitude again. It gave me joy. And even my friends and my family could just see the pain that had left my face.
Yeah. Incredible. As I said, I'm looking you at the screen and I see a handsome, vibrant, happy guy and would never know what you'd been through. And actually pretty recently. So that's the kicker. I think to my perspective, you've appeared to have recovered quickly from this this second big surgery. Do you feel like your recovery was steadily forward? Were there some bumps in the road along that way?
there had been some bumps in the road, and some of those were, you know, sort of pre-existing things. But what I have come to understand is, and where it, you know, a year and a half sounds like a long time, but it really isn't, especially with a surgery this complex.
Yeah.
So it's taken my feet time to readjust to the new spine.
Yeah.
You know, I had a knee replacement done prior to that. So it's taking that time.
Yeah.
So every couple months, I kind of notice, oh, okay, that feels better now.
Yeah.
You know, and yeah, so, and the majority of the numbness, you know, that you have after surgery like that has, it's, I would say it's 95% gone and healed.
That's amazing. Daniel, what kinds of things are you doing to continue caring for your spine now that you're, you know, out and mostly recovered and just kind of back to life? Are there things that you, that are part of a new routine that you do, or what are, what is your life like in terms of taking care of your spine now?
So for, to take care of my spine now, one of the first things that, well, I insisted, or not insisted, but I asked my second surgeon to sign off on some physical therapy because, mm-hmm. you know, the relationship I had built with my physical therapist through the years that we had gone through was like a personal friendship at that point, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And so we did the physical therapy, but what he said to me was, he says, so, okay, now it's time for you to get back in the gym. And nice. I started working with a personal trainer, mostly to work on all those spinal muscles and back muscles, you know, because they don't get worked otherwise when
right.
you're fused from T9 all the way to S1. You've got to figure out how to
activate
and activate them. Exactly. So that's the biggest thing that I have done for myself to continue my spine care, try to strengthen my core. But it is really about figuring out how to engage those muscles.
Yeah.
The other thing is I've had to learn when I need to say, I need to stop. I need to sit down and rest. And that's not something I do well.
Right. I can tell. That's, you know, active person over here. Just respecting those boundaries for yourself. That's like a new normal, I think. But the boundaries also change, right? As you move along.
Yes, it has. Yeah. So those have been the key things for me. Trying to get back to, I used to have a pretty strong meditation practice. So I'm trying to get back to that. Because I think those are all the things that help us keep mentally and physically in better position.
Well, the mind-body connection is so powerful. And, you know, I feel like you've uniquely been on sort of both sides of being, you know, in a difficult place and in a good place. And living with chronic pain like you did for so many years, you know, the mental health impact of that is very real. And, you know, what would you say to people struggling with that chronic pain in terms of managing the mental health component of that? Were there some things that you did?
I would say that the meditation was very helpful. You know, anything that would help me sort of go a little bit inward.
Yeah.
And sort of, it would actually give you, you know, like a mental break from the pain, right? You know, because it's hard to shut off those pain receptors because, as you know, as you described, nerve pain, you can't get away from it.
Can't get away from it, yeah.
And so the meditation was the one thing that really helped me try to even if I got 10 minutes of, you know, my mind being somewhere else. And mostly they were like visualization meditations.
Yeah.
And that was extremely helpful. Otherwise, I had no other way to get away with it. Even socializing with friends, you know, was still this fear factor of, you know, what's going to cause a muscle spasm, or when's it just going to hit?
It's just so awful to have to live through that. And so as you used meditation, you know, with the pain, now you're using meditation helping you in a more positive way. Describe that a little bit for us. How is the meditation supporting you now that you've, you know, recovered, mostly recovered?
Right.
Yeah.
You know, that still helps me to stay balanced. Mm-hmm. It helps me to continue to grow my gratitude for life. And it also helps me not react to things that, because, you know, there's so many external pressures in life, and it helps me to not react to those things, which helps me be a little bit more grounded to be there for other people, you know, like, as I had described before we started, I've got a friend right now going through a spinal surgery who's had multiple failed surgeries. And I've been able to pass on some hope.
Yes. That's great.
Yeah. And that, to me, that's the key thing is we have to keep our hope up and keep a positive attitude. Even when it's a struggle, you still have to work towards that.
That's awesome. And I think that mental training is so important in helping to achieve that, because we're talking about it like it's easy to do. It's not easy to do.
No.
It takes work.
Yes.
For sure. Yeah. For sure. Daniel, you know, as we sort of get to the end of our time together here, what advice would you give to someone who's got a back problem and is just sort of starting out down this path? We've just talked about your friend who you are helping to give hope to. But, you know, if someone is sort of newly diagnosed with a spine condition, what advice would you give to them?
My biggest advice would be that, you know, if you don't feel like you're getting the answers or any answers from whoever you're seeing, then look, you know, for another opinion. And I'm also, I mean, I was before, but this has made me even more of an advocate for teaching and research hospitals. Mm-hmm. Because these are the facilities where I feel you find the best talent. And, you know, they're all over the country. You know, we're very fortunate in this country that we have so many teaching and research hospitals. And, you know, coming out of higher education, you know, where I was part of the University of Maryland system, but not the medical side.
Yeah.
But, you know, it made me realize that those are the places where you find your talent. And if you've had a surgery before and it wasn't successful, then look for somebody in the spinal field that specializes in revision surgeries, because that's a whole different, you know, perspective. And that's, I think that's not a different training, but it takes a different type of person.
Right.
To figure out how to rearrange the puzzle that somebody else had, you know, put the pieces in the wrong.
Right. Place. Right. Well, and I think that also underscores the concept that, you know, you should not be afraid to ask a surgeon how many times he does that surgery.
Right.
Because there's no replacement for experience. And, you know, I think that you want to go to somebody who has seen this many times. It's not their first rodeo, right? Like, you want to be somewhere where this is what they do, and they do it all the time. And on some of our recordings with our surgeons that are on our board, they'll say, look, spine has become specialized. So a doctor who does, you know, a disc replacement type surgery or degenerative disc disease surgery maybe doesn't do deformity correction surgery or, you know, there's different almost like subspecialties within spine. So you want to go to somebody who does that thing often. And to your point, if you need a surgeon who does revision surgery, and go to a surgeon who does revision surgeries. He knows how to approach it. He knows how to assemble a team, or she knows how to, you know, look at things that are scarred or, you know, are not the normal anatomy because they've been altered. So I think that's a really important point. Yeah. Don't be afraid to ask that question. And any surgeon that is annoyed with you asking a question like that is probably not the surgeon for you, right?
I agree with that completely. Yes.
Yeah. I'm curious what you did in higher education, Daniel. What was your career?
Oh, I was the assistant dean for finance and human resources for the College of Agriculture and Natural Resources.
Wow.
Yeah, so.
Wow.
You know, I got to see a lot. We had research farms all over the state of Maryland where I lived at the time. And it was interesting to see the developments in agriculture over the years.
Yeah, definitely. You've been in a research-oriented environment and have an appreciation for what that brings. I think that's also good advice. Surgeons that are involved in research, whether that's in private practice or affiliated with a large university setting, keep them current. Those are good questions, you know, again, for patients to ask their doctors, you know, are you involved in current research? Do you attend the specialty conferences? Do you stay connected to the field? I think those are all great questions to ask.
Yeah, I agree with you, Rita. They are. And, you know, part of that is as you know, the field, the whole medical field,
yeah,
especially spinal surgeries and spinal issues, is changing so rapidly right now.
Yes.
And, you know, in a positive direction.
Right.
And so that's where you do want to look for a surgeon who is staying up to date with the newer processes, the newer mechanisms, you know, the disc replacements, facet joint sort of replacements.
Right. You're speaking my language, Daniel.
I'm pretty well versed in all of
that. Yeah. It's so true. There's so much that's happening in spine and really so much that happened over the last 20 years that, you know, things have changed for the better for people. And again, we're here to sing that from the mountaintops that modern spinal care can get people back to their lives like never before in history. But it is a journey and you've got to educate yourself and you've got to advocate for yourself because it's not a straight course really for anybody. And sometimes it is, but for most it isn't. And that's a little bit because our bodies are organic and the practice of medicine is an art as much as it is a science.
Yeah.
So it's, you know, it's important. Don't give up hope, find the pathway, take ownership of it and drive forward. That's more easily said than done for sure.
It is, but you are 100% correct because it is about advocating for your healthcare. And that's a component that I think so many people don't understand that they have to be their own advocate because nobody else knows what you're dealing with or what you're going through. And if you leave it up to, you know, the whole thought process that, you know, the doctor or the surgeon knows more than I do, that's not necessarily always the case, you know, because they don't know how you really feel.
That's so true.
You know, what your expectations of an outcome would be. So I think it is all about, and that's one of the biggest things I like to press home for people is you've got to be your own advocate.
Yeah. And you also just said a very important thing is what are your expectations from the surgery? And hopefully you can have that conversation with your surgeon that he can level set with you and or she can level set with you and to say, you know, we can't make you 25 years old again, but we can make you the best version of you right now so that you can get back to doing most of the things you want to do.
Right.
And setting an expectation on that's so important. My surgeon said to me, I'm going to do my part. I'm going to do my surgery, and the surgery is going to be beautiful and it's going to be fantastic. But you've got to do your part too. And I was so grateful. I was so moved by that. And I was so grateful for that advice that he said, this is an us thing. This is not me. I'm the surgeon. It's one and done. It's an ongoing journey, and you'll have to take care of yourself for the rest of your life. And we all do. Whether that means, eating properly and exercising properly and moving, staying in motion. Those are very, very important things for everyone, and especially people who've had spine surgery. So you're doing your part, Daniel, and thank you for joining us. Is there anything we haven't talked about today that you'd like to share with the audience, or any closing comments?
I don't think so. I think it's been a great conversation. I appreciate this so very much, because I do think that, the level of complexity of my story gives me something that hopefully will help others, give them at least some hope. And that's the biggest thing. So I appreciate your time. I appreciate what your foundation is doing. And these are the resources that I think just need to be made more and more available. And I think the surgeons in, the orthopedic field need to be aware of these and help, guide their patients towards using these resources to find out more. Because I do strongly believe that the more you know about what's going on, it also helps you set what your expectations are.
Couldn't agree with that more. The more informed we are as patients, the better our outcomes can be. And that's good for the surgeon as much as it is good for the patient and the healthcare system. Thank you for sharing that. Well, Daniel, thank you so, so much for joining us and for sharing your experience with such vulnerability and wisdom. Your story is such a powerful reminder that healing is possible, even after years of pain and frustration. And that perseverance and self-advocacy is what has made all the difference. You have shown our listeners that even when the road to recovery is long, it is still worth walking and doing. At the National Spine Health Foundation, something we believe in most is providing hope for recovery through sharing stories of success and expertise. It isn't always easy to find someone to relate to, even though 100 million adults suffer from neck or low back pain each year. To hear more stories of spinal champion recovery and access educational materials about spine health, visit us at spinehealth.org. If you're interested in supporting our show financially, you can contribute at the link provided. Thank you for listening.